As the twins grew older, they explored farther and farther afield, and soon knew all the farms and all the gardens on the estate. They had no sense of boundaries, no understanding of property, and so they went where they wished. They opened gates and didn't always close them. They climbed over fences when they got in their way. They tried kitchen doors, and when they opened, usually they did, people didn't lock doors much in Angelfield, they went inside. They helped themselves to anything tasty in the pantry, slept for an hour on the beds upstairs if they felt weary, took saucepans and spoons away with them to scare birds in the fields. The local families got upset about it. For every accusation made, there was someone who had seen the twins at the relevant time in another distant place. At least they had seen one of them. At least they thought they had. And then it came about that all the old ghost stories were remembered. No old house is without its stories. No old house is without its ghosts. And the very twinness of the girls had a spookiness about it. There was something not right about them, everyone agreed, and whether it was because of the girls themselves or for some other reason, there came to be a disinclination to approach the old house, as much among the adults as the children, for fear of what might be seen there. But eventually, the inconvenience of the incursions won ground over the thrill of ghost talk, and the women grew angry. On several occasions they cornered the girls red-handed and shouted. Anger pulled their faces all out of shape, and their mouths opened and closed so quickly it made the girls laugh. For a time the twins stayed to watch the spectacle of the villagers' anger. Then they turned their backs and walked off. When their husbands came home from the fields, the women would complain, say something had to be done, and the men would say, "You're forgetting they're the children of the big house." And the women said in return, "Big house or no, children didn't ought to be allowed to run riot the way them two girls do. It's not right. Something's got to be done." And the men would sit quiet over their plates of potato and meat and shake their heads, and nothing would be done. Until the twins walked off with a baby in its perambulator. It was the pram they were after, large and black and rounded, its high silver wheels promising speed and weightlessness. The baby was entirely incidental. The twins wheeled the pram, the voom, they called it, out of the yard and then tugged and pushed it over uneven ground behind the houses. Adeline did most of the work, kicking her sister out of the way. Emmeline was lost in blind ecstasy, crooning her love song to the shiny silver spokes. When they reached the deer park, they pushed the pram to the top of the longest slope and set it into position. They lifted out the baby and put it on the ground, and Adeline heaved herself into the carriage. Chin on knees, holding on to the sides, she was white-faced. At a signal from her eyes, Emmeline gave the pram the most powerful push she could manage. At first the pram went slowly, but then it picked up speed. The black carriage flashed in the late sun as the wheels turned faster and faster until the spokes became a blur, and then not even a blur, the pram shaking from side to side, threatening to take off. Suddenly it was clear what was going to happen. One of the wheels struck against a piece of rock sticking out from the soil. There was a spark as metal screeched against stone, and the pram suddenly was speeding not downhill, but through the air, flying into the sun, wheels upward. It traced a serene curve against the blue of the sky until the moment when the ground heaved up violently to snatch it, and there came the sickening sound of something breaking. Then everything was suddenly very quiet. Emmeline ran down the hill. The wheel facing the sky was buckled and half wrenched off, the other was still turning slowly, all its urgency lost. Emmeline knelt. Inside the crushed cavity of the carriage, a pair of green eyes stared back. "Voom," Adeline said, and she smiled. The game was over. It was time to go home.